The following program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery. Cane Vineyard and Winery supports Heritage Radio and the growing movement to change how Americans eat and how we think about our planet. For more information, visit www.cane5.com.
Welcome to Why We Cook, the Chef Smarty Vance radio show. Sorry, I couldn't remember the name of my show there for a minute. Something happened. Where am I? Welcome to Why We Cook, the Chef Smarty Pants radio show. I'm Erica Wides, your host. You're hopefully listening live tonight on Heritage Radio Network. Or maybe you're listening sometime in the future on a podcast. Boy, that was weird. I forgot where I was. So when it comes to food, you know, it's what I do. A good general rule is that fresher is better, right? I think that would be a generally agreed upon rule for most foods in most cultures. I mean, there are certainly certain foods that we like to age. We like to leave things to ferment or age or decay slightly, like things like cheese or wine or salami, stuff like that, beer. They all benefit from a slow, controlled rot. That's what it is. Slow, controlled fermentation is rotting. And even meat, even beef or other red meats, if you went out and killed an animal and tried to eat it, freshly killed, it would be really tough. It would be too hard for you to chew because you need to let that protein rest. You need to kind of let it relax and soften up and get broken down a little bit. The enzymes in the meat will actually tenderize it a little bit, enough for our weak little human jaws to chew up and swallow. And so we figured out over, you know, millennia of eating and cooking that some foods need time to age, to ferment, to soften. And some foods can't afford to take any time at all. There's no waiting period. It's now or never with some foods. And it's pretty obvious, I think, what those sorts of foods are, things that we're talking about, you know, things like shellfish or, you know, berries as soon as they're ripe, both of which have like a freshness peak of what seems like moments before they begin their inevitable decline. That's what it is. It's a race against death. Figuring out when a food's at its best and when it's in its decline. That's what it is. You're racing against the clock. And with shellfish, it's not necessarily a race against death, because if they died, you wouldn't want to eat them. It's more like a race to keep them alive, because if you let them die, you certainly don't want to eat them, because the minute shellfish start to die, they start to decay. There are enzymes in their heads that they start to secrete or in their bodies, and they become mushy and then they become toxic. And so it's why when you're shopping, you know, you'd never see like dead lobsters for sale unless they're cooked. You always see them swimming around in a tank because you need to keep them alive until you decide to kill them. It's why when you buy shrimp too, almost always the shrimp you buy have had their heads cut off, because the enzymes that cause decay after death come from their head. The head on the shrimp is really like the head and the body. You're just eating the tail. So if you whack the head off right after you catch the shrimp, you still preserve it because it doesn't start to break itself down. And those shrimp also have almost always been frozen too, which staves off the inevitable. And then they thaw them out and sell them as fresh. So with shellfish, it's like you're not really racing the clock toward death, because if they die, it's too late. You're racing the clock toward keeping them alive to keep them fresh. So it's another sort of fight to the finish there. But, you know, I was thinking about that, and I was thinking about, like, well, what's the opposite of shellfish then? Like, what do we want to kind of coax along and wait it out and let it kind of start that downhill slide? And I was thinking of fruit. Like, fruit, in a way, is the opposite of shellfish. You want to wait and let it sort of hit that point where it's almost starting to rot, or almost starting to decay, and then you pounce, then you kill it. You know, like a cat, like waiting, and then kill it. It's like there's one day of perfect ripeness for some fruits. For me, it's like it's bananas. Bananas have one moment. They have one day where I want to eat them. When they're all yellow and a few freckles show up, that's when the banana to me is perfect. Once they get more brown and really sweet, I don't like them like that. They're too sweet. And if they're a little green, they have that kind of weird tannic thing almost that goes on. So it's like I find the banana window so small, I don't even really buy bananas because I feel like I'll miss the window unless I eat like all six of them that day, and I'm not going to do that. But some fruits need you to wait. It's like a long period of holding out. And those are things like peaches and nectarines and melons and especially pears. You have to keep them at room temp and you have to wait. And they'll reward you, but you have to wait. And some people, like me, not so good at waiting. But I've trained myself to wait because I've seen what lies at the end of the fruit rainbow. I've seen the promised land, and it's worth waiting for. And also, like, when you're talking about freshness, because that's what I started talking about tonight, was freshness. I find also it comes down to smell. So, you know, as foods age, as they ripen, as they decay, as they begin their inevitable march toward the compost heap, their smells change. And you remember Toucan Sam from that cereal commercial? What was that for? Was it Lucky? No, not Lucky Charms. That was the leprechaun. Toucan Sam. Fruit Loops. Toucan Sam always said, follow your nose. And he was right. Although Fruit Loops only smell like chemicals and sugar and fake cherry flavoring. So I'm not sure what Toucan Sam was following. And he had a giant beak, not a giant nose. Just FYI. Let's clear that up. But I really think that, like, if you follow your nose, that's the way to go. Like, you need to just kind of let go and trust your nose. Because your nose will not let you down. Unless, of course, you have anosmia, which I talked about a few weeks ago, which is where you lose your total sense of smell. Which, to me, would be devastating. I don't think I could live with that. But when I shop with my nose. I always smell whatever I buy. You know, whether it's fruit or cheese or fish or meat. Like, you just got to get in there. Stick your nose right in. Because I feel like it's that sense that I can trust the most. It's like the most primal. It's the most accurate. You can be deceived by visual cues, but you can't be deceived by smells. Did you know that you cannot smell when you're asleep? Did you know that? I didn't know that until I read that just this week, that if you're asleep, your sense of smell shuts off. And that made me think that, like, no wonder before the invention of smoke alarms, so many people would die in their sleep in house fires, because by the time the carbon monoxide poisoning got you, you know, you were dead because you didn't smell the smoke beforehand. It's pretty scary. I've always thought I could smell in my sleep. I mean, because I feel like I've had dreams based on things that I'm smelling while I'm asleep. But I guess I wasn't really, like, truly asleep when I smelled them. I was just in, like, that light stage. I don't know. But this person who wrote this book that I've been reading claims that you can't smell when you're sleeping. And so sometimes in the summer, you know, when we're up at a tiny bungalow land, we get skunks coming around at night. And they often spray, and I can smell them. And I swear I'm smelling them in my sleep, or the smell is waking me up. But apparently that's not the case. Maybe I'm still kind of awake. Or I think what happens is I hear them. They fight with the raccoons, and the fighting wakes me up, and then they spray. We have this mulberry tree in our front yard, and when it is in full fruit, the mulberries fall down on the yard and all over the roof, and then the raccoons and the skunks come out, and they try to eat all the mulberries, and they fight it out over turf. And so they get into these screaming battles, and then the skunks spray the raccoons and spray us. And that always, you know, winds up factoring into my dreams, of course, or just waking me up and ruining my night's sleep. But turns out you can't smell in your sleep, so I must be awake. And So I've been reading this book. I mentioned it a few weeks ago about smell, and I'm still reading it. I've been haven't been getting much reading done lately on my I only get a chance to read when I'm on the subway, so it's, you know, 20 minutes there, 20 minutes back, and I'm done. So I talked about it a few weeks ago when I did my show that was called Good Smell, Bad Smell, and I'm still thinking about it a lot. I still have kind of smell on the brain, which is why I was thinking about freshness and decay and following your nose and all that. So we're going to take a very quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about smell and Tiny Bungalow.
It's a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune in to Hot Grease every Monday at 3:30 p.m. Hot Grease strives to bring sustainability, localized sourcing, and other forward-thinking schools of culinary thought to the minds and kitchens of everyday folk. Each week, Nicole Taylor's conversations cover the entire spectrum of food enthusiasts, from internationally renowned culinary masters to moms on a budget looking to impress their tiniest critics. Again, that's every Monday at 3:30 p.m., Hot Grease on the Heritage Radio Network.
Welcome back to Why We Cook, the Chef's Marty Pants radio show. I'm Erica Wides, your host. This time I remembered who I was and what I was doing. So last weekend was the first weekend of April, so we were all able to go up and open up the Tiny Bungalow, which you've heard me talk about here many times. We have this teeny, teeny, tiny little house up in the woods, and it's part of a community. It's an old bungalow colony, which were very common in the first half or so of the 20th century, and then all kind of disappeared and fell apart, but this one prevailed, and so we have a little house there. It's tiny. It was cheap. We like it. But it's only, we can only use it from April to November. It's not winterized, and the whole community shuts down on November 15th. We have to shut off the water, the whole thing. So basically the season is April 1st to November 15th. So this was the first weekend of April, so we opened up the house, even though it's a little cold up there in April. Sometimes there's still snow, but it's okay because it's summer. So there's this A&P down the road, and I needed some basic groceries. We got up Saturday morning, and I started cooking breakfast and realized that I had no cooking oil. No oil, no butter, no olive oil, nothing in the house because I cleaned out in the fall. I was organized enough on Friday night when we packed to bring things like, you know, good pastured eggs from the farm market and bread and cheese and vegetables and turkey, but I forgot about bringing any actual cooking medium, like oil. So very, very professional there, chef. Nice job. So Saturday morning, we had to run down the road, go to the A&P, take a quick trip. And, you know, I'm looking around the produce section because I wanted to get a red onion to have at lunchtime. And the red onions they had were gigantic. They were, like, bigger than grapefruits or, like, softball size. And they were $2 a pound, which seems like a crazy price to me. That seems like a lot for onions, since one onion was probably almost 2 pounds. So I just couldn't do it. I had to draw the line there. And then I saw these pears, just regular Bartlett pears on the display. And I was like, wow, those pears actually look kind of good. And I picked one up. I was shocked. It was almost ripe. It was starting to get soft. Had a little bit of smell. Really, really shocking for a supermarket pear. I never buy pears in the supermarket because they usually suck. They're always hard. They're never flavorful. And I think they're genetically engineered to not ripen. You know, they've been bred with something that kicks off their ripening gene because they're always hard. They're always flavorless. And I feel like they never get right. But this one seemed to have been like forgotten there on the mountain of pears, and it was actually starting to ripen. So I got excited and I said, "Oh, I'm gonna buy this pear. I'm gonna break down and buy a supermarket pear." But then we started walking to the back, and I noticed the discount produce rack. You know about the discount produce rack? It's like this little random shelf behind the produce department where they always put all the like kind of beat up, bruised, funny looking stuff. It's always wrapped in plastic on those foam trays, the way that produce was always sold when I was a little kid, where every single thing was on a foam tray wrapped in plastic so you couldn't smell anything. My mom used to buy stuff occasionally from the discount produce rack. And of course, back then I was always so embarrassed because she seemed so cheap. But of course, you know, you turn into your parents. So I always check it out now to see what's there. And on this, they had, you know, they always put stuff that's like minutes beyond perfect. Like something that's just hitting prime ripeness is usually considered past its peak. So they put it on there. And, you know, if you can sort of look past the cosmetic, like the little bruises and dings and stuff that this produce usually has, there is often like a level of ripeness and flavor that you don't find otherwise, because it's stuff that's sitting out and it's sitting away from the refrigerators. And so it's kind of decaying, you know, it's starting that long, slow decline toward death and decay that I talked about in the first segment. And on this produce shelf on Saturday, they had these other pears. There were packs of pears that were combos of different colors. And they were so ripe and so perfect that I could actually smell them through the plastic wrap. They were that nice. I mean, it was hard to believe that these supermarket pears in April were going to be this good. And they were four pears for $1.53. versus like $1.99 a pound for the pears that I was going to get. So that little pear went back on the shelf, and I picked up a pack of those discount pears. They had a few bruises on them, but other than that, they looked like they'd been on that shelf for, you know, a few days. I also got six huge cucumbers for a dollar because they also had tiny bruises on them. Now, that's just crazy. I mean, they were fresh enough, and I sliced them up for lunch, and we ate them in a salad, and you know, they're fine. Now, of course, none of this was organic produce, and it all most definitely came from thousands of miles away. But, you know, that's that conundrum with sustainability and local, is that if that stuff had sat on that shelf and I didn't buy it, it would have gotten thrown away. Somebody else would have bought it. So isn't that less sustainable than me at least buying it? I don't know. By buying it, I'm supporting the non-sustainable practice, right? But by not buying it, I'm contributing to waste. I don't know. Is it better to buy non-organic, non-seasonal, conventional produce that would otherwise wind up in a landfill? Or leave it and buy the organic turnips? Because this time of year, as you know from last week's show, it's all about the turnips. I don't know. I'm not sure. But what I can tell you is that were some of the best tasting, ripest pears I have ever eaten. They were unbelievable pears. I ate two of them alone that day. Then I brought the pears home, and I made a big mistake. I put them in the fridge. And in the fridge, they died. The refrigerator killed them. It killed the fragrance. It killed the flavor. It made them grainy. It took away all the aromatic flavor compounds. It really killed them. It was a sad scene. And really, the lesson learned there is that sort of ripeness, like I was saying, it's like this controlled balance. It's like a dance between letting things get just about to the point where they're going to get a little moldy or start to rot, and then grabbing them at that point. It's like you have to like wait it out, because in order to reach that level of flavor and fragrance and ripeness, you have to fight the urge to arrest it by putting them in the fridge. In the case of a pear, the fridge is just going to kill it. Apples are a different story, because apples are ripe when you pick them. They're not going to get any riper, and they actually start to deteriorate when they sit out at room temperature. You have to keep them cold so they stay crisp. But pears are like a special, unique case. And I think that's also why Americans just don't eat pears. We eat fewer pears than any other Western country, because I don't think we're prepared to allow our fruit to sit out like that at room temperature. We feel like everything has to be kept really cold and really sterile and packed away because otherwise we'll die if we eat it. But that's not the case with a pear. A pear, it's sort of like leaving butter out at room temperature or leaving a cheese out to ripen. You know, people would be horrified at the thought of that, but it's what people always used to do. And food tastes better sometimes that way. So we're kind of conditioned to only buy like the freshest, most beautiful, most perfect looking stuff. I mean, I know, even I am, that, you know, when I go shopping, even at the farmer's market, I instinctively go for the unblemished, the crispest, the brightest colors in my produce. It's like, you know, I think to myself, well, I'm paying for it, so I should get the best stuff I can find, right? But then something like those pears come along and they're all kind of beat up and bruised and they even had like a couple little like bashes in them, and they were so ripe and so amazing and so fragrant that you think like maybe we were better off when our fruit and our food didn't look perfect, when it sort of looked, you know, a little funky, a little messed up, but it tasted a lot better. You know, it's just something to think about. So we're going to take another very short break. When we come back, talk about rotting greens. Welcome back to Why We Cook, the Chef Smarty Pants radio show. America Wide's your host. Remember that you can always listen to any Heritage Radio program on iTunes. You can podcast any show, anytime, ever, on iTunes. Take it with you wherever you're going. You can also listen to shows on our website, heritageradionetwork.com. You can also leave comments on that website. You can leave comments for individual shows, and we like to hear from you and hear what you're thinking about our shows. You can also become a fan of Why We Cook on Facebook. You can find us on Facebook, and you can also find me on Twitter at Chef Smarty Pants. So there's really no excuse for letting us know how you feel about these shows. You have plenty of options for getting in touch with us. Choose your social media method of choice and let us know. So I've been talking tonight about freshness and ripeness and the slow decline toward decay in food, and how some foods you really need to eat when they're at their most fresh peak, and some foods you want to wait it out and you want to let them sort of start to slide down that hill and then catch them before they hit bottom. Something like a pear, which I talked about before. And so maybe Thursday or Friday, I was at work, and we had this bag of baby arugula, you know, like that pre-washed baby arugula that comes from probably somewhere in California. And there was about a third of it left, and it was definitely past its prime. It was kind of wilted, starting to look like a little slimy. It had that kind of lawnmower bag smell that tells you, these greens are on their way out. And I knew that if I put it back on the cart with the returns for my class and sent it downstairs, it would have just gone in the garbage. So you know how I hate waste, and I can't stand to see food get thrown away and not used. So I rescued it. I rescued the arugula from its fate, and I took it home. And I knew the time was of the essence, that if I didn't cook it within probably the next 12 hours, it was going to turn into a slimy green mess, like a literal lawnmower bag kind of slime. So I knew what I had to do. I took it home and I threw the entire bag of wilted arugula into a big saute pan with some olive oil and some garlic, some really good hardneck garlic that my niece grew at school in her school garden. She goes to a Waldorf school and they have a garden, and they grew all this garlic this year. She gave me some. So once that wilty, slimy arugula was sauteed, the freshness factor wasn't really a problem. anymore, because even if it were really fresh and I sautéed it, it would still be wilted. And it tasted great. It actually had a better taste. Like, it didn't taste rotten. It just sort of tasted bolder. There was a little more to it. I mean, it's really a fine line there between getting a little wilty and turning to slime. But I caught it at just the right moment. And, you know, and I think allowing your food to kind of go past its prime like that is probably a good thing for your immune system. And I think in the past, that's a big part of how we kept ourselves healthy, is that we did allow our food to start to decay and break down a little bit. And we wound up ingesting tiny amounts of molds and bacterias and yeasts that helped us build up our defenses and keep your immune system really powerful. There have been studies done in the past couple of years about that in cultures where things are kept too clean, where everything is refrigerated, everything is sealed, everything is super clean. Places like Japan or here in the U.S. where people feel like they have to spray their kitchens down with bleach spray all the time and wash everything really well and disinfect everything, that people are developing these immune system disorders because they're keeping things too clean. It's like we can't get so out of control that our food starts to decay, because that would mean, you know, we're losing our grip on our civilization. But we need to eat dirt, and you need to eat some mold and some bacteria. I mean, that's why people eat probiotics. And it's crazy because, you know, people will go insane spraying down their kitchen with Clorox spray, and then they'll go out and spend money on a brand of yogurt that has, you know, active live cultures added back into it. Well, just don't clean your kitchen that well, and you'll get those active live cultures in your food. And there's also been some writing lately and speculation that food allergies and asthma are also on the rise because we don't live among farm animals anymore. And when we're babies, we're not playing in the dirt. And apparently when infants crawl around in the dirt outside, they ingest these worms, these microorganism, tiny worms. They eat them because they get dirt on their hands and they put their hands in their mouths. And those worms colonize their guts and trigger an immune reaction. And they think that that immune reaction is what prevents kids from developing food allergies and also allergies to animals, because they're crawling around in this dirt, and some of that dirt is animal feces. So in places where people still live with dirt floors, or they live in, you know, more agrarian or rural settings, they don't have the allergies and the asthma that all our kids are starting to develop. So it kind of makes sense, right? I mean, we were supposed to live outside with animals on dirt and crawl around in it, you know, from the time we were infants. So we just don't eat enough dirt, really. And the dirt that we eat is the wrong dirt. Of course, being Americans, we eat the wrong dirt. We can't get anything right. You know, we eat like factory farming dirt. So the dirt we eat is completely sodden with pesticides and you know, E. coli infested manure dirt, not the right kind of dirt. So we've really screwed it up. I mean, we've really gotten to the point where we're actually eating the wrong kind of dirt, which is really hard to believe. But I'm going to make an effort to eat more decayed, rotted, dirty stuff. I'm going to leave all my discount rack fruit now out on the counter and let it get to that point, the point where maybe I'll even see a little mold on it, but that's okay. Except my apples. My apples have to be cold and crisp. Everything else, it's going to be decay city for you. I'm going to try to simulate the dirt crawl and the pre-refrigerated days of farm life past. Now, there's also thought that maybe we're showering too much and we're too clean and we're washing away some of our immune abilities by being too clean, which makes sense. Deodorant, soaps, and hand sanitizers and all of that. So that's it for me also. No more showering. I'm not showering anymore. You'll know that I'm not doing it because I'll be the one on the subway reading the book about smell. And you can be like Toucan Sam and just follow your nose and you'll find me. So that's about it. We're just about out of time. Thanks to Jack in the control room. And remember, you can always find us online at heritageradionetwork.com. Have a good night.
Whole Foods Market celebrates Earth Month with the Do Something Real Film Festival, a collection of six provocative, character-driven films focused on food, environmental issues, and everyday people with a greater vision. Come see one of the six features at City Cinemas Village East from Saturday, April 16th through Thursday, April 21st, every night at 6 p.m. Learn more about the films and special events at www.dosomethingreal.com. That's www.dosomethingreal.com. Sponsored by Whole Foods Market. The following message has been brought to you by Fairway Market. What's the buzz about honey? Well, those busy little bees are up to something, and it is delicious. The Fairway label honey is superb. Fairway only hires worker bees that are the best at what they do. This makes for a great tasting, high quality honey at an amazing value with the Fairway stamp of approval. And on top of being delicious, honey is a great substitute for other sweeteners and can even benefit your health. This includes better energy, respiratory improvements, and balanced blood sugar levels. It's a no-brainer. Get your Fairway honey today.